Hello there, everybody. This is episode 9 of Podding on the Ritz. Once again, this is Hadley Fraser flying solo. Ross Noble is down under preparing for his one-man stand-up show. I imagine he's probably pretty lonely. I know I am, because right about now, I imagine Ross would probably be interrupting me, or it's like a sort of annoying fly in my ear, going a bit mental, which brings me on to what we talk about in episode 9, which is Ross sort of going a bit mental. He talks about it and preparing for the end of his run here at Young Frankenstein. So if there is still some sort of instability there, Ross, you know, maybe talk to someone about that. Musical of the week is the one and only Witches of Eastwick, which is one of my personal favourites. It's absolutely crazy. But perhaps most excitingly of all, we've got the first part of an interview with the creator of Young Frankenstein himself, the one-man comic industry, Mr. Mel Brooks. Hope you enjoy listening to that part of the show. Ross and I loved speaking to him. It's an absolute pleasure to have had Mel on the podcast. We think we're probably punching above our weight somehow to have enticed him on. I think he thought it was radio or something like that, or something, you know, a little bit more than just two goons sat in a dressing room. But anyway, the first half of Mel's interview is on this week, and for the second half of the interview, make sure you download next week's episode, episode 10, because the second half of Mel's interview will appear there. So, yeah, enjoy that. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, rate the podcast, leave a little comment about the podcast, and broadcast your love of the podcast to all and sundry. I'm just going to add a little thanks here to our super producers, Seamus Murphy Mitchell and Owen Donovan. It's probably the last time that I'll get to do this. They've been with Ross and I all the way through this, and we wouldn't be doing this podcast if it wasn't for them, and they've been absolutely fantastic. So thank you, boys, and enjoy the show. Sorry, everybody. Ross is just welcome to episode 9.
Hello there.
Hi. Ross is just sending a. Is it an email to?
No, it's not an email. I'm looking for me important. It's a lot of internet work this week for me.
Have you done some preparation for the show?
Yeah.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lucky listeners.
Oh yeah.
You lucky lot
it's
out there.
All happening.
Ross is. How are you, Ross? All right.
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah.
Would it be
fair
to say we're sort of in the twilight of your association with the Young Frankenstein this time round? Young Frankenstein at the Garrick Theatre.
Tickets still available.
I'll be here until
forever.
Well, still 83 probably. I'll be 83 and still playing.
Yeah.
Broderick Frankenstein. You're.
I've got 2 weeks left, haven't I? Well, 2 and a bit weeks. It was now Friday, is it? No, it's Thursday.
Yeah. How many shows have we done?
160 something.
Yeah.
Pushing it, something like that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. How are you feeling?
It's funny because, like, now I'm energised. I mean,
what, today you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. I've sort of gone a bit, what's the politically correct term? Mental.
Right, okay.
A little bit.
Why?
Well,
doing the show?
No, because obviously, like, my wife and kids aren't around at the moment.
Yeah, okay.
That sounds like a deeply sad story, doesn't it?
It does a little.
The wife's taking the kids. So I'm in the flat by myself for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And they're in Australia at the moment. They've gone over there. So I'm sort of just kicking around. Sort of on my own in London.
Yeah.
And I've sort of reverted. And because I live very close to the theatre.
You do live quite close to the theatre.
276 metres away. Yeah. That's
a fun number,
like
isn't it?
Like a fun game for the listeners. They could work out.
Oh, I see.
You see what I mean? Because if I'm 270...
I see what you mean. The radius would only take you a certain...
You could probably work out where I'm staying. But anyway, I get up, I come to the theatre.
Trafalgar Square.
Yeah, I am.
You're in Nelson's Cot. You've got, you've got the penthouse. You're living in Nelson.
I have to sleep standing up. I have to sleep standing up with one arm across me.
Yeah.
Like that.
How'd you get on with the pigeons?
They're fine. They keep me warm at night.
Yeah?
Yeah. I have to wear a jumpsuit of grain.
Right, okay. Keep them.
So they keep me...
Yeah.
Well, I was talking about this the other day. Oh, Perry, villager number two.
Yeah.
We were down in the park and a squirrel...
Yeah.
My mate, who was there...
Squirrel's your mate?
Yeah. I'm a friend to all animals. So there was me, Perry, Nathan... Who, ironically...
Nathan from Young Frankenstein.
From Young Frankenstein. He is the... he has a pitchfork at one point. And
he plays Bertram Batram.
He does play Bertram Batram. And when he's a villager, he has squirrels embroidered. Have you ever noticed this? He has squirrels embroidered on the back of his coat. A detail the audience will never pick up.
It's all about the details, isn't it?
Totally. So yeah. Anyway, we were down in the park there, and my mate Pete, and a squirrel ran across... Now, you would think that with his connection, Nathan's connection to squirrels,
yeah.
It would have been him that received the full...
onslaught?
It's only run up his leg. Pete,
the squirrel has run up his leg?
It's run up his leg.
Yeah.
And like a beastmaster or something. Well, I don't know. I'm not going to make any cheap jokes about hiding nuts or anything, but it come up his leg.
I've never heard of anything like that.
Honestly. Ask Perry. On stage tonight during the show.
Perry, we can't. He's on holiday.
Of course he is.
He's gone to Thailand for 2 weeks.
Oh, ridiculous.
Yeah.
He probably needs some sort of squirrel detox retreat.
That'd be the place to do it, wouldn't it?
To get away from the squirrels.
Squirrels in that part of the world?
No.
Didn't think so.
No.
So you're feeling a bit mental.
Yeah. So anyway, I leave the flat. I'm staying up all night. I only got up about an hour before the show the other day.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
For the matinee, though.
For the matinee, yeah, that's true.
You didn't get up at 6 o'clock in the evening.
But it's not far off. I've sort of turned into this strange...
You've gone a bit vampiric. You've gone a bit Lestat.
I have.
Haven't you?
Yeah.
You're going to be...
Time passes a lot in my world.
Do you want to try a plum cough sweet?
Oh, thank God you said cough sweet. I thought if you start undoing your trousers...
I was given some new Chinese cough sweets at Stage Door the other night.
You've got a massive Asian selection now, haven't you?
I really have, yeah.
I might... Now, these ones... Because you've always got weird...
I'm being given a lot of cough sweets this production. I don't know if they're trying to tell me something.
No.
Some of them I have tried.
And a lot of them, I mean, there is not a single English word written on that.
Not on that one. That you've got a packet of yellow sweet. They look, from the depiction, they look like they've got lots of different flowers, lemons. But in the picture of the sweet makes it look as if it's got sherbet in the middle. So I wonder if there's a bit of a fun element to it as well.
Mm.
As well as medicinal.
Oh, no, I tell a lie. Look, they've got all this writing here. And then there is one English word, in.
Ooh.
Something in something.
Sherbet in lemon.
Possibly.
Do you want to try it?
Are these the ones that you give to your missus?
Yeah, and she gave them out to someone in her cast and it did make her throat considerably worse. she was on stage and she lost her voice. Are you going to try one?
I might do, yeah.
Ross, have you been predictably looking at anything on the internet this week?
I know what you're thinking, oh, he's just been wasting his time.
Well, you're up until 6 every morning.
That is true. But no, I've been doing some proper...
Research.
I've been looking at a lot of news. A lot of news. Here's a bit of news for you. Right, hang on, let me just...
Is this theatre news?
No, this is important. Honestly,
Can I give you a bit of theatre news?
Go on.
There's a show happening at the St. James, I think, which is now called the Other Palace, called Eugenius.
With Warwick Davis?
With Warwick Davis, but they just announced that Mark Hamill,
Luke Skywalker,
is going to be donating his voice. I don't know, he's probably not donating, but to the voice of somebody the robot.
Wow.
Sammy the robot. I don't think it's Sammy, but what about that?
Wow, that's
Mark
good.
Hamill's done a musical.
Mark Hamill does do a lot of
voiceovers, doesn't he?
He's the Batman, he's the Joker in Batman.
Does he sing? Doesn't need to, does he?
Probably not.
I did a Star Wars musical.
What?
Yeah.
God, you see, this is what's amazing about you, is that You can look at your CV, but it's very tightly regulated, isn't it?
This was in student days, mine, and it was an adaptation of the original trilogy, 4, 5, and 6, based in London, sort of contemporary London, East End, with sorts of Gilbert and Sullivan music, stroke Sondheim-y music, and we won an award in the Observer for that year of Edinburgh for the show most likely to make you want to top yourself.
Incredible. Yeah. That's great. Although there is, I must have told you this before, the very first time Jon Bon Jovi was on an album, a commercial recording, was as one of the choir on the Star Wars Christmas album from the Christmas special. It's brilliant.
It is awful.
What do you mean, R2? What is Christmas? Oh, you are a silly droid. Christmas, it's a time where we get together with family. Oh, really, R2? And it's like, and then the music starts, and you start saying, what do you get a Wookiee for Christmas when he already owns a comb? Genuine song.
Anyway, what was the news that you've been looking
Let's look at this, right? Unbelievable, right? Did you know that there was an earthquake this week, a magnitude of 6.2
on the Richter?
On the Richter, it says here.
It's scary being in an earthquake, though, isn't it?
Have you been in one?
When I lived in Los Angeles, we had a few there, and the first one that I've experienced, it is unlike anything else. You know, if you feel the sort of the road beneath you undulating.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah.
Gives you the willies.
It's where are we here? It says, it was 103 kilometers northeast of the island of Honshu.
That's the main island of Japan, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see. I think I can see where this is going.
I'm just saying, this is important news.
World
news. Do you want to know? Do you want to know what the damage was?
Go on.
The main damage caused, says according to this, was over 8 million broken Hadley Fraser figurines. That was what happened in this Japanese earthquake. Loads of snapped Les Mis and Phantom records, apparently, and an unaccountable number of other trashed Hadley Fraser posters, lunchboxes, T-shirts, bobblehead dolls, mugs, tea towels and other Fraser-related knickknacks.
Yeah.
He says, this in turn led to the breaking of over 50 million Japanese lady hearts.
Audience member of the week.
Audience member of the week.
Who have you got?
Well,
Can we just say that we did meet one of our audience members of the week the other day?
Well, this is what I was going to say.
I was going to
put him up as a nomination for like a double.
Ooh.
You see?
I think he deserves it.
Yeah.
Go on then.
So, yeah, well, do you want to explain about them?
Well, I can't remember which episode it was. Was it episode 3, I think?
Possibly, yeah.
I've forgotten his name temporarily.
What? I thought you were calling me temporarily.
No.
I don't know momentarily.
Hang on a minute.
Have you got it?
I'm going to find out his name.
Anyway, this fella.
Stop the clock.
He was the fella that he started the...
He started the one man...
The one man standing ovation.
Yeah, and we gave him Audience Member of the Week that week.
But not only was he on his own and his wife was... and his wife didn't join him, he only had one arm.
Yeah.
And then so he started the standing ovation with the one arm, and I was so impressed, we made him Audience Member of the Week. He's already come back and seen the show again. And we met him at the stage door.
I think he's come back a few times now, actually.
Yeah, and you know what else I noticed as well?
Adam,
there he is. Hello, Adam.
Adam Ratcliffe.
Yeah.
Adam, it was nice to meet you.
So he's very much up there. I also give you...
Yeah.
Again, was it last night, in fact? The two... I don't think it's sexist to say attractive young women in the front row, front and centre... Boom, down the front.
It turns out they were students.
What?
From a college that I'm the patron at.
Good Lord.
Stand by.
Well, this whole scenario
has
now become hugely inappropriate.
Right, okay, we should probably leave it there, shouldn't we?
Abuse of power as a professor.
Professor of musical theatre, Hadley Fraser.
That's the one. But anyway, at the end of the show, right down the front, up they got, standing ovation,
yeah.
Right, that started it. And the rest came, but they were definitely the first that led
it. They led it, yeah.
But during the scene where the monster is looking at your lifeless body on the stage,
yeah.
He went...
on purpose, lifeless. Not just but my performance yes, is lifeless.
Right, yes. Come on, let's sorry, just... I'll say that again. Yeah, your lifeless yeah. body, the Guardian.
Hadley Fraser's lifeless body populates the stage for the majority of the show.
A blessed relief came when his...
I found out the name of one of them on Twitter, because they're from the PPA Academy, which is Performance Preparation Academy in Guildford.
Oh, I see, because that sounds a little bit like somebody'd ring you
PPA
up.
PPA does, yeah. Have you been sold PPA? Keely Mae Clarkson.
There she is.
Keely and...
Mae Clarkson. She's not called... Her first name's not Hammond, is it?
Don't think so.
May
I'm not sure who her friend was. Apologies, but anyway, there we go. Keely Mae.
Right, hello, Keely Mae.
Yeah, hello.
Keely Mae. Well, we'll find out.
Yeah.
anyway,
so they stood up.
So they stood up, but while your lifeless body, yeah. the times was on, was on the stage.
Yeah.
Nick, who plays the monster, gave a bit. He delivered his line. I'm going to use the word gusto.
Yeah. Right.
He delivered it with gusto and a little bit of, and there's always a little bit of, I mean, I gob all over the audience
doing together again.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, I'm in the moment.
You can't help it though, really.
Exactly. And you sort of expect it. The front two
rows. Especially not after one of these sweets.
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, I'll be spitting blood on them. It's just going to be horrible. It's going to be
like the Evil Dead.
It's going to be like some sort of Victorian TB clinic. Tonight, and sometimes they sit there with petri dishes though, just to take the
see
DNA.
What culture they can
so,
grow.
Yeah, yeah. I heard somebody in the audience good. It's the only bit of culture we're getting tonight. and then
anyway, my life so, is body. Nick's look, resolutely.
Nick, he's let it, and it's it wasn't like a full flob or anything. It was just like, but it was enough that I saw it.
Sort of in the light.
Across the footlights.
Yeah.
Lit up by the spotlight.
Yeah.
And it flew across.
Like a boomerang of spittle.
Exactly. And I don't know whether it was on Mae Hammond-Clarkson's or a friend, but it literally hit her in the neck.
Right.
Even to the point where the friend looked as if to go, oh my God, you've been hit by... And she sort of smiled and, I'm going to use the word demurely, wiped it away and continued... With the show.
Admirable audience member.
And then still standing ovation at the end.
That's what you want, isn't it?
So I'm going to see it.
But get up and keep going.
As much as... I mean, Adam's had it once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see. So this is a sort of choice between the two.
I think, even though he gets an honourable mention.
Yeah.
But definitely Mae Hammond-Clarkson.
Keely Mae and her friend.
Yeah. They get... Because started the standing O and received fluids... From the stage,
but yeah. So kept on going.
Just kept their soldier on. Nick didn't even know he'd done it.
I've got a couple of questions from Twitter, Ross, from the listeners. Wait, could you field a couple of those?
I'm more than happy to.
I've got a question from Molly here.
Oh yeah, Molly here.
My name Molly. Oh, not right. My name is Molly. Just my name Molly.
Right.
Can you reveal any backstage secrets? Ooh. Which actually brought me on to thinking about something, Ross.
Right.
Which is theatrical superstitions.
Oh, right.
Have you got any?
Yes.
What are they?
I would say, so I'm not a superstitious person at all, but I like a break a leg rather than have a good show.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's quite a traditional one then.
Yeah, but that's just because...
Would you say name of the Scottish play?
I probably wouldn't.
Would you whistle on stage?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So
that's quite a big one though for some people. Yeah. I've worked with a couple of actors who if they hear you whistling and it's not part of the action, they'll tell you to stop whistling.
Right. But that is bollocks.
Right.
So
go on, continue.
Well, because, you know, that the whistling thing came from the fact that in the days when there used to be the old hemp flies,
which we've got here.
We've still got here. So
we could test this hypothesis.
Let's put a Roger Whittaker Alan Ross. Yeah, Roger Whittaker played here and he was killed.
That would confirm it.
Got into the middle of Durham town and dropped a piano on him.
Awful.
So yeah, it was the sailors.
Was it the sailors?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. So the sailors, they'd come back from, you know, sailing the seven seas.
Yeah.
And they'd, so they, anyway, so what they would do is, in the films, it's like, splice the mainsail and all that.
Yeah.
And then they didn't do that. They used to whistle. And depending on what the whistles were, was what they would just, woof, they'd let stuff go. So, and then they would come back from sailing, they'd get in the theatre, and they would...
And they'd be the flymen.
And they'd be the flymen, because they were so good at the rigging. So, like, you would whistle, and you'd hear, and instead, like now, obviously, they've got cans on.
Yeah.
Lower the village. And they lower the village. Yeah. Which back then, bit of a whistle, woof, down comes the thing. So if you're stood on stage, like a right Herbert, thinking, oh, I'll have a whistle... You do the wrong whistle, boom, straight away something will fall on your head. Hence, it's unlucky.
The evil eye. You're not supposed to have peacock's feathers on stage because they represent the... You know, peacock's feathers. Many thespians believe that chaos will ensue if the dreaded feather makes its way onto stage.
The dreaded feather.
The dreaded feather's a good name for a band.
Yeah.
Or a play.
The dreaded feathers of the evil eye of a peacock's tail.
I'd never heard of that one before.
Never heard of that. We could, you know what? We could do a sort of Mythbuster style thing where we could take a show that's going well.
This one, for instance. Yeah.
Shall we, and then in the interval, shall we...
I'll
just come on. When you're doing Listen to Your Heart.
Yeah.
Right, it's a beautiful romantic song.
Yeah.
Where you and Summer Stralin
are
falling in love on stage. Shall I come dancing on with a headdress of peacock's feathers?
And see what happens.
Whistling.
And shouting Macbeth.
Over and over again. There he is. How are you, sir?
Okay. I'm very good. I just wanted to just start our talk off by apologizing from the bottom of my heart for the low wages I've been paying you guys.
It's been hell,
but, you know,
Mel.
It's been good for me. It's been good for me. I've been eating in better places since you guys have worked with me. Let me tell you one thing.
Go on.
Let me tell that Geordie something. Listen. When I was a soldier, I was in 1945, a couple of months before the war ended. I was in London, and I went up to Glasgow, and Saki Hall Street. There was a pub on every corner. Every corner had a pub on both sides of the street, and I met a lot of people in Glasgow. And you know Ross knows these people, and it turns out. A lot of the taxi drivers there were Jews. So I said, you guys talk funny for Jews, but how come you're there? How come all you Jews are in Scotland and Glasgow? I mean, what the heck is that? And they said, well, a lot of us came over here because the captain of the ship that left Hamburg or whatever ports that took the Russians and, you know, whatever, and the Poles and the immigrants there, stopped at Glasgow and then said, America, America, all off, America, America. and they all got off the boat and they thought they were in America. Well, I mean, they didn't understand the language anyway, and they thought Americans talked with that crazy Scottish accent. So,
God.
Anyway, so, I mean, there were a lot of them there. I'll tell you, I was very happy in Glasgow. Well, I was drunk all the time, so I wouldn't have known what was going on.
Mel, my mum was born on Socky Hall Street about 4 years before you were there.
No kidding.
Yeah, my mum. Socky Hall Street. She was born on Socky.
You know, they had streetcars there. Trams.
Trams, that's
the
one.
All I'm saying is, thank God.
And it was great. And I'll tell you, and there were dances on the weekends there at the Denison Palais. It's now a supermarket, but it used to be a big dance hall. And the Scottish lasses were so sweet and, you know, and beautiful I had a great time. I really did.
Was that the first time you were in the UK?
The first time I was in the UK.
Yeah.
And the taxi drivers in London were Jews, and they were all Cockneys. So I didn't understand them. And then I went up to Glasgow, and I certainly didn't understand anybody up there. But they kept plying me with drinks and music. It was beautiful. You know, it was a great time in my life. You know, and Ross.
Yes.
I heard that you're foregoing Australia. You're not going to go there. You're going to stay in the show. That's what I heard.
is that what you've heard? Wow, you found a load of money. You know what? It's going to be hard. It's going to be very hard to leave the show. It's not going to be easy at all. It's been a true. It's been a delight. But you know, contracts and all that, I have to go. And also, you know, I've got to keep the Australians happy. You know, so yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, no, they'll be the beneficiaries of our loss. I mean, they're going to be loving you there. They talk funny too. I don't know if they'll understand you, but
they've got Jews there, don't they? They have got Jews down in Australia as well. I keep saying.
The Jews will save you, Ross. They'll save you there.
Mel, is there anywhere you've been where you have understood the local Jewish population?
Let's see, where have I been? You know, Anne and I opened. Anne Bancroft and I opened a movie called To Be or Not to Be with Sweet Georgia Brown, a very wonderful tune. And we sang it in Polish. That was the opening number of To Be or Not to Be.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so I got like 100,000 letters from Poland and written in Polish, you know. And I said to them all, I learned enough Polish to say, to send them back a letter that said, if you want to talk Polish, I can only give you the lyrics to Sweet Georgia Brown. I don't know anything else in Polish, so don't annoy me with anything else. If you want Sweet Georgia Brown, you got it, you know.
Well, of course, you signed my Polish Young Frankenstein poster, which you'd never seen before, and it's the only one in the world.
I know. I never knew they had one until you showed it to me.
Yeah.
I never knew they, you know, and no offense, but I didn't know they could write. But you
know. Well, no, since you've signed it, and it's the only one you've ever signed, and you didn't know, that's my kid's college, that's my retirement. I'm hanging on to that. So tell us, so you're fluent in Italian. How did that come about then? How did you learn Italian?
Well, you know, I married an Italian, Bancroft, with this hoity-toity English-sounding name, Bancroft, if you must, is really Anna Marie Louise Italiano. That's her real name. And so, you know, when I hung around with her parents and her sisters and there was a lot of Italian. I like spaghetti, and so I suffered their language, you know.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot of Italian from them, and also I was taken by a great guy, Emil Buis, who ran Fox International, and he would take me to Germany and everything. But one of the best places was Italy. You know, there was Milano and Rome and Venice, and I'd sell my movies there, and so I learned to speak. And the girls were so, I don't want to talk about that on here, but it was worth knowing a lot of Italian.
Now we get it. Yeah.
I'll tell you that, right.
Listen, so Mel, the podcast is about Young Frankenstein and about theatre in general. Can you tell us a little bit about your sort of the background in theatre that you had? Like, when was the first time you went to a show? What was the first musical you saw? Like, what was it about the theatre that made you fall in love with it?
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, I was 9 years old. I mean, it's a true story. My Uncle Joe was a cab driver, and he used to take the doorman of the various theaters on Broadway, the ones that lived in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. And when he took them home, they would give him passes to whatever show was playing there. And one night he came to me and said, at the Alvin, it's now the Neil Simon Theater.
Yeah.
It's the it was then the Alvin Theater. And it was, I was nine. It was way, way back. And there was the opening. I'd never seen a musical. I'd seen theater, and, you know, it was okay, you know, and that never really moved me. But he said, this is a musical. There are songs, and there's a band in the pit there. There's a whole band. So I said, okay, Joe, and he said, lay down on the floor in the back of the cab, because if the flag, there's a flag up on the meter, if the flag is up, then the police and everybody will see. No, it's free. There should be nobody in the back. So he said, keep your head down, lay on the floor. Because if the cops see the flag up and they see somebody in the back, I'll get a ticket. I said, okay. So I laid on the back, and there was the Chrysler Building, and then, you know, there was the Empire State Building, and I knew I was going over a bridge, and my back was humming. And finally, we stopped, parked at the Alvin Theater. And well, in New York in those days, I don't know what, I don't know, in 1952, whenever it was, there was no cars, you know, he could park anywhere. So he parked his cab there at the Alvin Theater. We went up to the second balcony, way up, and they started the overture. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, you're the top, and a ballad like All Through the Night. All through the night. I don't know if you know that tune. It's gorgeous. And then there's
the
top, and you know, and I mean, all a whole, a, you know, a Cole Porter score. And then I saw Billy Gaxton, who was brilliant, and Victor Moore, one of the funniest guys that ever lived. And then on stage, Ethel Merman. I'd never seen anybody like that. And there were no mics in those days. No mics whatsoever. No mics. And she was still too loud. we had to hold our ears a little bit. And it was just when when I left there, I really had tears of joy. And it's true. I had tears of joy in my eye. I couldn't believe it. And I said to my Uncle Joe, you know, I said, Joe, I'm going to do that. I know that everybody in our tenement is headed for the garment center, you know, all headed to be cutters and salesmen or whatever. I mean, everybody from Brooklyn went to the garment center to work it. I said, not me, Joe. Not me, Uncle Joe. I'm going into show business, and I never stopped. And that was the show. What's the name of that?
Anything Goes.
Anything Goes.
Right? Anything Goes. Yeah.
Anything Goes. It was Anything Goes, and that's it. So that changed my whole life.
That was the show. Wow.
I've been aiming. Yeah. I never thought of movies or TV. Well, there was no TV then. I never thought of anything but the theater and musicals. And it took me like, you know, 20 years to get back to it. Because I started in TV with the show of shows with Sid Caesar, who was a bit of a genius. And Neil Simon was writing alongside of me, and Larry Gelbart, and oh. And you look at the guys that wrote that show, that wrote the show of shows. Joe Stein, who wrote Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah.
Woody Allen was in there as well, wasn't he?
MAME and Hello Dolly, and I mean, you know, and then Neil Simon, who wrote all, you know, like 37 great plays, and we all worked together, you know, and we learned our craft writing these sketches and on television, and then I did movies, and it took me a long time to get back to the producers on Broadway with Nathan and Matthew, Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick.
So is that why you, because like most of your films have got some sort of, you know, obviously, like Blazing Saddles. I mean, there's Spaceballs, there's the Hello, My Honey, Hello, My Dad. All of your films have got some sort of... Did you always think, I'm gonna turn these films into musicals, or were you going to write... That was always the plan.
I'm working, you know, I love lyrics, I love music, and, you know, it's... There's something indescribable about it. It's special. It doesn't talk to anything but your inner being, your soul, and there's nothing like a song. There's nothing like music. And I'm sure I could write a play, a funny play, but it wouldn't have that special take me to heaven thing that music does,
the producers, why did you choose the producers first? What was the idea behind going with that first?
Well, I had two movies that lent themselves immediately to the stage, to being musicalized on the stage. One was Young Frankenstein, and the other, and I had a fight, and I fought to say which one, and the producers, because they had stories that lent themselves so perfectly to musical comedy, because you go to music when you're so full of emotion and overcome with feeling that you can't talk anymore. You got to sing it, and both of them had that quality in it. So I said, well, I'll start with the producers because it's more dangerous. Springtime for Hitler.
Yeah.
I really wanted to be dangerous. So I took the more dangerous route. I'm so proud of you guys. I'm not just blowing smoke, but I want to tell you, I'm going to miss you guys very, very much.
Oh, bless you, Mel. Thank you.
I'm going to miss you because you're so damn good. The show is so damn good because of you. The audience doesn't know. You know, I sent my latest tweet out for London, and it goes like this. If you can't get a ticket to Young Frankenstein, try Hamilton. I hear it's good.
Musical of the week.
So go on then, musical of the week.
Musical of the week. Last week we talked about Damn Yankees.
Yes.
Do you remember?
I do remember.
And
yes.
There was the character of the devil in the disguise of, I think his name is Mr. Applegate.
That's right, yeah, Mr. Applegate.
And it got me thinking about another musical Do you know where I'm going with this?
I don't know.
There's another character another musical that has a character of the devil who comes into a small town and puts the cat amongst the pigeons.
I think I've got this.
Yeah.
Is it?
Come on.
Witches of Eastwick.
Bingo.
Bang.
In one.
Straight away.
Anyway, it did quite well, actually, Witches of Eastwick. It lasted a couple of years. TV's Ian Lovejoy.
Tim Lovejoy.
Ian McShane.
Yeah.
Dominion? I think it started at Drury Lane, actually, and then... Then it transferred to a smaller theatre, Prince of Wales Theatre.
I'm going
to
say 97.
2000 it started.
Oh, was it 2001 it moved. As late as that?
Clark Peters took over, actually, who wrote Five Guys Named Mo. Nemesis.
I'm up against...
What's the plural of nemesis?
Nemesi.
Right.
Yeah, I'm up against one of the Moes. In the What's on Stage Awards.
Also in the cast was Lucy Arnaz, the daughter of Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball.
Good Lord.
Wow. Fact for you there.
Do you like the fact that
And Scarlett Stralin, sister of Summer Stralin, who plays Inger in Young Frankenstein the musical, which is why we're here.
Good Lord. Yeah. There you go. Do you like the fact that my... when I say, I think that's probably... And I guess the years and I have an idea about these. Do you like the fact that my musical knowledge extends to me seeing the theatres whilst I'm riding my motorbike around London.
Strikes me as very, very
sort
of predictable for you.
I must have told you about that when I got stopped for directions by those American fellas.
No.
On the Strand.
No.
And they were looking for the Savoy.
No.
So I'm stood there on the Strand, and they went, well, how do I get to the Savoy? And I said, what you want to do is go straight up there. You see that massive...
Oh, you have told me.
Have I told you this? Yeah.
Keep going then.
For those that... I went, just go straight along there. See that massive massive picture of me riding on the back of a pig? Just turn right there. They went, what? I went, yeah, that's just find me on the pig outside the theatre. Turn right.
What theatre were you in?
The Vaudeville.
Vaudeville.
The Vaudeville.
Mm. Do you want the... Shall we go... Shall I give you a little bit of the plot?
Yeah, let's
go. Do you remember it from the film?
I don't remember the film.
I wonder whether they adapted... I think they adapted the John Updike novel.
Right.
Anyway, so, act one. A little girl sings the praises of her little town of Eastwick, Rhode Island. She's quickly interrupted and overpowered by the rest of its inhabitants.
A little girl...
I know!
...is overpowered by a mob...
And they describe Eastwick as a town where everyone looks through their curtains at everyone else and where gossip is more powerful than truth. I don't think you need to overpower a little girl to get that point across.
That's true. Just show some curtains with some people looking through them. I always find if you're trying to make a point, I think just try not to overpower a child while you're doing it.
I think it certainly undermines
a
lot of your point.
Yeah.
Anyway, a forced parade led by an honouring self-appointed First Lady of Eastwick, Felicia Gabriel. Felicia? Yeah. Overtakes proceedings.
Hang on, sorry.
A forced parade?
So hang on. So they're overpowering a child.
Yeah.
Right? A child's being overpowered. Get off me. And then somebody goes, hang on, stop overpowering the child.
Yeah.
We're going to force somebody into doing a parade.
Well, I think maybe you stop doing that to the child. You all have to now be a part of this parade.
Oh, so in many ways, that's a good way of stopping child cruelty. Do you know what I mean? Like if you sort of, like, I've never worked as a professional social worker, or even on an amateur basis, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
But... if I saw a child being overpowered, I'd probably rush in and I'd go, oi, stop that. Get on this float. That's what I'd do.
Anyway, as she is about to receive her prize, an unexpected thunderstorm forces everyone to run home.
Sorry. Prize?
Well, I think this First Lady of Eastwick, Felicia...
Oh, I see.
I think she's given herself a prize.
I thought you were talking about the little girl.
I don't think she gets one.
Most overpowered child.
Anyway, I think the thunderstorm is possibly because you know who's turning up. Now, the three witches, you've got Alex, Jane and Suki, right? They're in Alex's living room having peanut butter brownies, martinis... Oh, peanut butter brownies and martinis.
Right, yeah.
And they begin to complain. They talk about their boredom with their current relationships.
Do we know they're witches at this point?
I'm not sure.
Right.
We do, according to Wikipedia, but I don't know.
Right, okay, whether it doesn't... They're just three women drinking martinis, eating biscuits, talking about their love life. Yeah? Let loose women.
They talk about their boredom with their current relationships, which include casual sex, abstinence... and Suki's affair with Felicia's husband, Clyde.
Right.
Can we just break that down?
Yeah.
They're complaining about the boredom of casual sex.
Right.
I can't...
Oh, God, yes.
And abstinence.
Hang on.
Which is it?
No. They're all bored. One's bored about not...
I see.
One's bored...
of casual sex relationships.
Yeah. One's bored because of the abstinence.
Yeah.
And one's bored of having an affair.
An affair.
Yeah.
Okay. Alex's son, Michael, appears and he's got a girlfriend and they're in love and the witches aren't very happy about that.
Why don't they overpower them? That seems to be
the trick, doesn't it? Yeah.
In this town.
Cut two. Felicia, prize winner,
self-appointed prize winner. Yeah.
Parade despot. In Felicia's kitchen, she and Clyde, her husband, show how truly unhappy they are. The phone rings. A man from New York has arrived and bought the deserted Lennox mansion and is tearing down the trees in his backyard.
Ooh.
Felicia, being the considerate soul she is, thinks of the snowy egrets that will lose their homes and decides to rally the town to stop him.
The Snowy Egrets.
Can I tell you that in previews, there was a song called What About the Egrets?
Brilliant.
Why did they cut that?
And can we get the rights to
Actually, I worked with the lady who played Felicia earlier on in the year. I should ask her about What About the Egrets. Rosemary Ash. She's a brilliant actress, singer. I bet she'll have a good tale.
It's a stellar cast, isn't it?
It's a stellar cast.
I mean, I'm thinking, is an egret, is that a cross between like an eagle and an egret? Like a real daft bird of prey. It does, instead of landing in its nest, just smashes into the tree. Oh, look at that egret.
He's done it again. Anyway, Daryl Van Horn is the chap who's bought Lennox Mansion.
Right.
He emerges from a puff of smoke.
Of course he does.
Because he is the devil, isn't he?
Or he's burning leaves.
Could be that. Well, he's tearing down all the trees, or egrets. He begins to charm all the residents, and the Eastwick Preservation Society banner that Felicia's organised explodes in a fireball and everyone flees.
Wow.
Mm. Now, Daryl meets Alex, one of the witches, on the beach, where she's sculpting in the sand.
Wow. Sculpting the sand? Like
doing sand sculptures.
Sand sculpture, yeah.
Yeah, which can get quite big. Anyway, so Alex is doing that on the beach. She's embarrassed and allows Daryl to take her back to his house.
Oh, yeah.
They discuss sculpture. Just keep all this in your mind. And Daryl begins his seduction.
Oh.
Gossip begins to work its way around the town. I presume that's a sort of split stage scene, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say
that. Oh, no. And Daryl goes to Jane's studio. Daryl works. He goes to Jane's studio where she's playing the cello.
Oh.
They discuss music and have a wild and sexual cello-violin duet, which ends in the cello playing by itself and a massive musical and actual orgasm.
Good God. Hang on.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I said an actual musical and like an actual...
So I presume the instruments are...
Playing themselves. Good Lord.
Yeah. Daryl starts his ways with Suki as well. So she's the third witch. Right. But instead of sleeping with her, he invites her to a tennis game.
Ooh. Yeah.
It's only when Suki arrives and sees Alex and Jane that all three realise that Daryl has been sleeping with all of them.
Hang on. So he's on the beach?
On the beach with Alex. With his sexual cello with Jane.
Cello.
And I don't know how he's...
And then the tennis match.
Right. Get this, though. He serves a ball which explodes in midair and says that he's the man they prayed for.
Wow.
I think...
That's a good...
Wouldn't you back it up with something a bit more... I don't know. If you served a ball that exploded in midair, would you have something else at the end of it rather than just, I'm the fella you were waiting for? Or you think that's quite...
I mean, we don't know how explosive the ball was, but I mean, sir, I mean, come on. If you were trying to seduce three women in a recreational setting, an exploding tennis ball would be quite... I think they'd respond to that.
Okay. Anyway, I'll just get to the end of the...
Especially delivered by Lovejoy.
True. I hadn't thought of it in that context.
Never forget that.
Anyway, it's towards the end of the act, Alex, Jane and Suki enter, each wearing a stunning sexy dress, singing about their childhood insecurities. Daryl sweet talks the woman and teaches them how to curse Felicia by throwing things into an enchanted cookie jar. So they're becoming the witches.
Right, right.
They throw a tennis ball. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's an exploding one.
Right.
A bracelet and some feathers, hopefully not peacock.
Not the peacocks.
Into the jar, and immediately Felicia starts to throw up.
Right.
But what does she throw up? A tennis ball, a bracelet, and some feathers.
Wow.
That's very literal in terms of witchcraft, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you'd think put a bit of off soup, and then she'd throw that up and just think she was ill, instead of going, wonder what.
Also, throwing up feathers, very dry.
I mean, it's more than your tennis ball. The size of a tennis ball.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Enchanted by this, presumably, the witches turn to Daryl, who tells them to close their eyes, and suddenly they're flying high above the audience, end of act one.
Boom. There you go.
There's a lot going on, isn't there?
I mean, I like the idea that end of act one was a woman vomiting up a tennis ball. I mean, that any musical, I'd be happy with that.
Well, Elaine Page did it with the hair boy.
Well, exactly. Every day of the week.
You ready for Act 2?
Yeah.
Daryl invites Alex to Mexican night at his house.
Brilliant!
Hey.
I love it.
I don't know if Rico's there, but it's a sort of... It's the greatest hits, really, of musical of the week, this
that's
one.
That's great.
Which is why it appealed to me. Anyway, Nemo's diner, Daryl bumps into Felicia and Clyde. He taunts her and she vomits a cherry pit. There's a lot of vomiting in this show. I don't think that's necessarily what you want to see, is it? After you've been out for a nice dinner?
But also, they've done that the wrong way around. Because for me, once I've seen a woman bring up a tennis ball, I want more.
You're right.
Start with a cherry pit.
And then get to
and
the...
Then build up. Then like ping pong, golf ball, tennis ball.
Yeah.
Work
escalation.
Squash. It would go ping pong, squash ball.
Squash is smaller than ping pong.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it is.
No way.
It is.
Oh, this is the Doritos thing all over again.
I've played a lot of squash.
Have you?
Yes, sir.
What, you think a squash ball is small?
Hands down.
Really?
Yeah.
Nah, I'm not accepting it. I'm not accepting it.
Look it up and I'll keep going.
All right. Ping pong. Ball. Size.
Yeah. Shall I look up squash ball size?
Yeah, look up the squash ball size.
Because otherwise you'll be...
Oh, hang on. Look at this. Look. There's a picture of ping pong balls, all different sizes.
Well, there we are then.
Squash. Standard Olympic size.
Well, that's going to be smaller, isn't it? To make it more difficult. Squash ball size.
Hang on. Table tennis.
Squash. Diameter. 1.56 to 1.59. Table tennis. 1.6. Golf ball, 1.68.
Oh, what? So I've literally...
Racquetball, 2.2. You've missed out by, like, 0.3 of an inch.
Oh, God. I can't believe it.
I tell you what, though. You're right. You want to see an escalation. You want to see it. By the end of the show, you want to see her vomiting up a basketball, because that's 9.4.
See that? So just so people can imagine this, set to music with Lovejoy dancing.
Yeah.
See the balls? What's the...
Okay, so you start off with squash ball, table tennis. I'm going to keep going through a couple of them. Cricket ball, 2.86. A wiffle ball, 3.15. Shot put, 5.2, but presumably quite heavy. Bowling ball,
8.595. Oh, God, my God! Oh my God.
Finishing off the end of the show, basketball 9.4.
Bravo!
Wonderful scenes.
That's wonderful.
So Daryl's taught the town to have sex. The witches go to Daryl's in coats and take them off to reveal matching lingerie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a different time back then, wasn't it?
It's mad, isn't it, the fact that who knew that you could who knew that just by exploding a tennis ball, women would turn up in their pants?
Get this, though. What? Just as they're about to have sex...
All three of them?
I don't know, maybe. Right. John Updike wrote this, blame the suit, shoot the messenger. Daryl's manservant, Fidel...
Fidel, yeah.
...delivers a letter from the Eastwick Preservation Society... that says they're suing him for filling in the wetlands.
Right. So he's cut down the trees. Did he put the trees in the wetlands?
Maybe.
Right.
I don't know what's happened to the egrets.
Yeah.
Maybe they're to fill in the bits between the trees. Yeah. In revenge, all four start throwing anything they can find into the cookie jar.
Oh.
And in Felicia's kitchen, we see the result. She's had a... I don't know if she deserves this.
All she is
a bit of a busybody.
And does she have to sing a song as she's vomiting?
I don't know. I'll ask Rosie Ash and see. In Felicia's kitchen, we see the result as she screams at the still bewitched Clyde. Eventually, she can no longer cope with the curse and tells Clyde to do something, so he hits her with a frying pan. Get this, though. Suddenly free of Felicia, he shouts that he's finally happy, but with her dying breath, Felicia pulls Clyde's tie into the waste disposal unit and turns it on.
Good God.
So they both die.
Wow.
I don't think they've deserved that.
And you wouldn't die from that. You might get choked up a bit.
Yeah, they can be quite powerful, those American waste disposal.
Oh, yeah, American, of course.
You know, into the sink.
I'm thinking of the European ones, the less powerful mortars.
Anyway, eventually, there's a wedding between Daryl and not one of the... with Jennifer. Oh, I think that's the girlfriend of one of the witch's sons. Daryl tricks her into marrying him.
Oh, God, right.
They get the hump, but before the wedding, Daryl leads the town, singing the praises of himself, the glory of me. The wedding begins, but the witches appear, and using a voodoo doll of Daryl, they begin attacking him. He is thrown back to hell in a fireball,
right,
and the church collapses. Michael and Jennifer are reunited, and the witches realise the error of their ways. End.
It takes all of that for them to realise the error of their ways. When you see a fireball... which ball?
Well, I would think basketball.
Probably.
It's the biggest.
One of them zorbing things.
Yeah. Oh, they're big, aren't they?
Unless he, when the fireball appears, the child who's been put upon goes, not again.
Anyway, so that's Witches of Eastwick. It's had quite a number of productions. It was, you know, in the US and abroad and other things. What have we learned?
Wow. I mean, I think what that's saying is that if you give in to your
baser desires,
I think that's it's saying don't give in to your desires, but if you do, as long as you see the error of your ways when a man bursts into flames, that's fine.
Okay. What about sort of being a busybody? Don't be one.
Yeah, but then the town returns to its...
Yeah, but she's dead.
What, so that...
All she was trying to do was look after the birds, the egrets.
Yeah. Yeah, I think basically what it is don't give in to your base desires.
Yeah.
And even if their habitat's destroyed, the egrets will be fine.
Okay.
Yeah. It's an important
lesson. That's a lesson for life.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Russ.
I need to go to hospital now to have my throat looked at.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. What's the prayer that we cry for? The prayer.